Support for reporting on technology and innovation comes from Juna Sleep System. Personalize your mattress. More information at junasleep.com.
Welcome to the October 20th edition of Tech Radio. I'm your host, Ken Osborne. We have a great show planned for you today. We have gathered our experts to talk tech in the studios of KCSD in Sioux Falls. Is Matt Guru, Joel Barovalite. Hi, Joel.
Hey, how are you doing?
I am wonderful, sir. How is your week?
So far, so good. It's been great weather.
Absolutely. Also joining Joel and I today on the air is from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre, Jeff Litterick. Jeff, how's your week?
Oh, it's been pretty nice. It's great for October.
October, you mean Cybersecurity Awareness Month, October, right?
That is correct.
I have a feeling we're going to talk about that a lot on the show today. I have a lot of tips to pass along, some things that some takeaways that people can start using today to make their lives safer, I guess, online. And we're going to talk about those today. But we want to let folks know they can ask their questions today. We'll try to provide those answers for you. But please don't be shy. If you're a Facebook user, you can simply just go over to Facebook. You may be there now. Type in /techradio on the end of the address up there. It'll take you to our page. Please like that, and you can post your comments and questions there. Again, don't be shy. Our phone number as well. 800-524-3604. That's 800-524-3604. Give us a call. Ask your questions. They can't be, too easy or too complex for us today. And please don't think that it's a silly question. We get those kind of comments all the time, but they're really not. If you've got a question, there's probably a few other listeners that have that question as well. We'd like to tackle that for you today. 800-524-3604 is the number to call. Twitter users, if you're a Twitterer, you can send those questions to me, KentSDPB. It's at KentSDPB on Twitter. And the email address, again, is inthemoment@sdpb.org. If you'd rather text it to us, 956-STPB, that's 956-7372. We'll get a direct shot to us here on the show, and we'll get your questions answered. And I realize it's a lot of ways to communicate with us, but we're trying to cover all our bases here. Speaking of which, Joel, was there an announcement with the iPhone X? Are people starting to line up for that? What's the official on that?
Well, the iPhone X isn't currently available. For those of you that maybe listened to the last show, we talked about Apple released two models of version numbers of the iPhone about a month ago.
Yeah.
The iPhone 8, 8 Plus, and then the iPhone 10 doesn't come out actually until November. And pre-orders, if I remember correctly, don't start until, I can't remember. I think it's October, the end of October.
Yeah, that's what I thought. They just announced that it was going to be midnight on a certain date in October.
Yeah, and I don't remember exactly when it was. It's the end October 27th. I took notes. October 27th, and availability 1 week later, November 3rd, which is pretty typical for them.
Sure.
So, but I think the news that maybe you saw was there's some leaks saying that Apple only has a few hundred thousand phones built, which won't even remotely cover the demand for that phone. But we shall see. You know, they're as good as scaling as just about any company out there. So, time will tell. I haven't seen any notes about how well the iPhone 8 has sold. I think it's been pretty good, but I imagine the iPhone 10 will be very, very popular.
Is that just based on your own, you've got the 8 now?
I got the 8, kind of did, and I've done this before. I usually get, whatever the entry model is, usually the smaller screen, right away if that's what's available, and then I'll use that until the other phone comes out, in this case the 10. A lot of times it'd be either like the larger version, and then I'll give the smaller one to my wife. She'll get an upgrade, and then I will get the iPhone 10. So that way I'll actually get to have hands-on use on both of them, which I like, because then I can tell everybody, what I think and what what they should do.
Sure.
And I have actually before gone back to the other phone. I've done that before too, where I kind of like this one better.
Are there actual features on the 10 that you're looking forward to, or is it just you're getting it to try it and possibly go back to the 8?
You know, one of the things I'm really going to like is it's got a larger screen, but actually a smaller footprint than the 8 Plus. So, or about the same size screen, but a smaller footprint because it's all screen. And I've actually always liked smaller phones, but I got used to a larger screen. So I'm really interested to see how that goes. Of course, the new camera on the 8 Plus and then the iPhone 10 is going to be great. I'm interested to see how the facial recognition goes. I like the fingerprint recognition also, so either way is good for me. I'll be interested to see how it goes. I can't imagine it's not going to work. Apple's not big on implementing things that don't work really well right away. But other than screen size and smaller footprint, I would also be happy with either of the iPhone 8s, frankly.
I saw some security concerns bubble up about the facial recognition, and those all kind of proved to be false, didn't they? Folks are kind of freaking out about being able to hack and get all kinds of and basically get the user database on the faces and names and stuff. But those are all stored internally to the phone, right? There's no way to really hack
right,
that.
Yeah, exactly. You can't hack into Apple's system and then gain your user data because that's as you mentioned, stored all locally on the phone, and also inaccessible too. So. You know, the encryption on the iPhone, especially if you turn on all the security features, is kind of second to none really out there. So I often, when my wife says, you know, should I store that on my phone? I often say, you know, your phone is actually safer than just about anywhere, including paper or your computer, frankly. So, I'm a big believer in the encryption on that. And you know, with the newer features on the phone, on all of these phones, not just the Apple's phones, but being able to find your phone remotely, disable it and brick it. Brick it is just a term that means to erase the data remotely. They're very secure. And I think if you look up records for, you know, phone thefts over the past 10 years, they've gone drastically down since these security features have been implemented, not just on the iPhone, but all phones.
Jeff, let's get over to you and start talking a little bit about this Cyber Awareness Month. The governor even signed a proclamation about it. So I guess it's they're trying to raise some awareness in the state, and that's great. There's a lot of aspects to this. I posted a link earlier about talking to your kids, trying to keep them safer this month and implementing some sort of old school values on the new tech. And I wanted to ask Joel about that later, but how he deals with that with younger kids. But Jeff, if you had, I guess, one thing to pass along today, let's pick your top concern and we'll just sort of whittle it down from there. I've got a few things listed myself, but what's your number one takeaway this month? If you could get everybody in the state to do this, what would that one thing be? Stop doing this or start doing this. What's number one on your list?
Well, going future, because of the threats, mm-hmm. the number one is, and you know, this is kind of sad to say it as fair as is, is not even patching, though, you know, that's important.
Okay.
The number one is to be very, very skeptical. And what I mean by that is almost all the major attacks and where this is, a lot of this stuff is going to and a lot of the new stuff is all in what we call social engineering. That is the method hackers use to con you into doing what they want. And really what that is an interesting part of this, there's a scam going on right now that they call you, your business, they'll call your business and ask for an invoice and send you to a fake website to prove that they are somebody who says they're not. And they'll get you to ship stuff to them, and then when you go to pay, the company says, that's not us. You know, this is not all technical. This is all human interaction, right? They actually contact you through email or phone. They talk to you, in fact, in some cases, asking for POs and stuff, going back and forth over a period of weeks, making this scam. I mean, it's kind of like the con artist, the old grifter movies and stuff, The Hustler, right? A lot of the cyber stuff is becoming that. The weak link is human generosity and the willingness of humans to help each other. And while it's a sad state that you actually have to put up defenses against that, you have to look at all that stuff, phone calls, emails, you know, web pleas. You know, half the pleas for aid for the hurricane victims are totally false. You know, you have to be aware that stuff can happen and really do due diligence no matter what facet of your life is anymore. And, you know, I'm going to put this up. Warren Buffett, almost everyone knows who Warren Buffett is, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's made a quote that cyber attacks are the number one problem with mankind, even worse than nuclear weapons at this point. Because the impact over the next few years could even be greater than a nuclear war between two countries for the rest of the world. We've talked about this in the past, and we've always had the anecdotal incidents. I mean, if people go way back, the older people think, you know, hackers were, you know, high school kids playing pranks on each other, you know, or college people, you know, playing pranks and mm-hmm. we're trying to get into government databases to free the information and stuff. That's not cyber security anymore. Cybersecurity is a humongously big business on the side of the attackers. They are making billions of dollars in hacking you. This is a for-profit center. This is not the old college or high school kid anymore. These are professional people. And in case of ransomware, the software programmers who write ransomware make six-figure salaries. Okay? It's kind of important to understand that they can make more money writing that ransomware software than they can do getting a legitimate job in many countries doing software development. The intake, i.e. the people actually paying in because they've been attacked, is one for 2016 is $1 billion. This is not small chump change anymore. The actual software industry to write these bad programs is well over $68 million. Or $6.2 million industry just to write the ransomware. Mm-hmm. And that's only one part of their attacks. I mean, between all the cyber attacks going on and stuff, this is really big business. And, you know, this is why we have the October Security Month, because, yes, we still have, and they make the news, the nation state hacking to get secrets and stuff like that, and industrial secrets. But in reality, most people, what they're going to encounter is a for-profit business that's out to get money from you by attacking you through multiple ways of cyber warfare, through privacy invasions, through ransomware, through tricking you, for example, as a company to shipping goods and never paying for them, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's no longer that prince from Nigeria anymore, is it? You used to be able to spot an email from somebody, and if it was so poorly written or so many words were misspelled, they're not misspelling words anymore, and they're using complete sentences in English.
And they're willing to call you and talk to you as a person, right? Not, I mean, we all know about the Microsoft tech support scams, where they actually call you and trick you into, on your computer, allowing them remote access in so they can take over your computer. For businesses, one of the latest, you know, scams is they call up the business acting as, you know, we wish to buy your product, and we kind of talked about this a little bit earlier, but the whole scam is, we wish to buy your product, can you send us a PO or an invoice, right? How businesses buy between businesses, right? So they send that off, and they say, well, here's the contact person, and they try to impersonate different businesses, and they put up fake websites with just a slight misspelling in the name and direct you there to prove that, yeah, we're legitimate, we're another business interested in your goods. And then when you ship the goods to them, they actually intercept the shipment and move it to somebody else. Actually, you know, like through FedEx or UPS, I don't know if you know this, but you can log in and change delivery options. They will actually ship it someplace totally different than you thought, and that's the last you've ever heard of your goods or the money, because the people who thought ordered all these goods from your business were not the right people. I mean, and it's a big scam. And when you think about business to business stuff, that's a lot of money and a lot of lost money fairly quickly.
absolutely. So new, I guess, new vectors in the attack on businesses nowadays. I talked to your boss earlier, and ran across a couple of interesting stats. And I always wanted to throw this out there because this is kind of shocking, and this should kind of bring it home to most people that use email. The state of South Dakota last month, 27 million email messages came in to state addresses or state employees and other addresses that the state has. 25 million of those were stopped right at the door and said, no, you're not going to get through. They were spam, phishing, had malicious attachments. That's a pretty high rate. 25 million out of 27 million emails in a month were not legitimate.
And that's actually slightly down. The percentages have actually been slightly better. It kind of flows with the season, though. We're going into holiday season. We actually expect an uptick in that ratio of more bad versus good. Also, whenever there's any natural disasters, there's a ton of scams going on. But, yeah, that's actually slightly kind of down than normal. So it's not a good percentage, no. And this is why a lot of companies for years have been really, hating email, because they have to actually throw most of it away because most of it's bad.
Yeah. Well, they don't have to let it through the gate, I guess, and that helps folks. If it does get through the gate, though, the problem is that 90% of the compromises that are being reported, now these are ones that we guess we know about, start with that email phishing message, and that's where it's really important to follow just a few quick little reminders, and we've talked about them on the show. We've probably talked about most of these on the show before. I don't know if we've talked about them listing them out here like we are right now, but as far as looking at that actual email address, we tell people not to click on links that they get in emails, to actually just go to the website if it's your credit card or whatever, but hovering over that link at least to see if it's where it resolves and if it's right. Are there a couple more tips that you can think of, Jeff, that for emails?
Yeah, especially with all the just one letter off companies and stuff, I highly, highly recommend double searching stuff. And then also, you can copy parts of those links and then put them into Google and see if Google is complaining about being a bad website. Because, what they've gone to, because, we've talked about this before, and people have started doing this. Whenever, cybersecurity is like an arms race. Anytime we get better, the hackers try to get better too. So they're, doing their best to make it look so legitimate that unless you look very carefully and read every single letter, you get off. For example, by being 4 W's instead of 3 in front of a company name, right? Or just changing one letter in a company, or adding an underscore or a dash. Stuff that a lot of people may not realize. So always, always go to the company's website directly, and then be, like I said, be very, very skeptical.
Skeptical. If it's too good to be true.
Of anything, because anything free, anything, oh, you won this. Most of the time it's bad. Now, yes, you may be the lucky winner of a motorcycle or something like that on the web, but it's highly suspicious, highly doubtful, and it's the free stuff that are trapping more and more people in. Hey, sign up for this contest. You can win this. You can win a Harley Davidson. All you have to do is put in your email address here. And then they use that as, oh, you've won. Follow the link. Well, I signed up for this. You click on the link, and suddenly you have malware all over your machine. So they're willing to do the long games where instead of just blindly sending out an email, targeting you specifically for your interests, and then playing, not delivering the bad stuff until 3-4 emails later. They're not, are willing to exchange emails back and forth with you to gain your trust enough so that you make that fatal mistake and click and get ransomware. So that's what we're really seeing a lot, is a lot more kind of AI-type things behind the scenes where they will interact and try to gain your trust over time. It's not just blast out an email to 4 billion people and, see who clicks on one link. No, they'll send you a good email first, then reply to your questions, and then reply again, and then suddenly you'll get the bad email, 5-6 emails down the chain, and by then you're too trusting, and you just click because you kind of think you know what's going on, and bad things happen. So just be very aware of that kind of stuff can happen.
Well, let's continue this discussion. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, though, we have a listener question considering wireless security at home, and I think that's also in the news, but we'll tackle that after this quick break. And we are back in the moment on Tech Radio. I'm Kent Osborne. We are talking tech with a couple of our favorite computer guys. We've got Jeff Litterick from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre, and our resident Mac guru is Joel Brovelite from Sioux Falls. And if you have questions for them, our number is it's an 800 number. You can call us toll-free. 800-524-3604 is that number. And if you'd rather just send us a text, that's fine too. 956-SDPB, that's 956-7372. Jeff, just not to put a too fine of a point on this, you know, what's this got to do with me or the average person or whatever? I can tell you from experience, if you don't take the time to be skeptical like Jeff asked us to, and I'm sure Joel does too, if you don't take that time and you click that one wrong link or you call back that one number and something happens, you're going to not only compromise what's on your computer, but you're going to spend so much time, I can tell you, rebuilding your machine or going out and buying a new one and building that up and getting it just the way you like it with all your files in the right place. If you can get to all your files, if you've done all the things we've talked about in this show for years, if you've backed up your data, you have the latest, let's say your QuickBooks is backed up and your photos and your documents and all your spreadsheets are all where they're supposed to be, following Amos's 3-2-1 rule, three copies, in two places and all those different things. If you've done all that, just reassembling all of this and getting your life back to normal is hours. It's literally hours and hours, and it might even be days and days of your time. That's what you've got at risk here and at stake. Besides your, at times it can be your personal data and other things, but I'm just talking about ransomware and other types of phishing schemes. So sorry.
And if they get enough and they actually do a data theft, it's not days, it's months.
Oh, yeah.
It's just months and months. If you stored your online banking information and they steal that and get to your accounts and transfer the money, I can guarantee you, you're going to have weeks of intense pain.
So be skeptical, folks. That's what we're trying to get to today, and that's fine. Jeff, we got Judith sent us a note on the Tech Radio Facebook page, and please discuss home wireless security. Their iPad is telling them that their wireless is not secure. They have a router. It uses WPA protocol instead of WPA2. Now WPA2 has been in the news this week, but let's get to her WPA issue. First of all, should she be using WPA at home right now?
No. All wireless encryption protocols at this exact time, if you have not patched both your machine and your AP, are actually kind of broken right now. And WPA2 came out to fix WPA. WPA is totally broken and insecure. WPA right now, if you have not patched, is also very unsecure. And we'll go a little bit over what I mean by that. But at least with WPA2, Apple is producing patches here soon for all your Apple devices. Everyone's rolling out patches. You need to patch both your computer, your iPads, iPhones, and your access points, but at least it can be patched. WPA cannot be fixed. There is no way to update or fix it. You must turn it off and use WPA2. Now, what we're really talking about here, just so you're aware of the level of security risk, is this is not someone who's going to be able to attack you over the Internet. What this is WPA is an encryption to protect the data as it goes through the air between your machine and your access point. So basically, think of a bubble around your house, which is the range of your wireless network. Anyone in that wireless network, if you don't have any encryption or in that range, can easily intercept all your data and steal anything you send. Your data is, unless you use other encryption methods, your data is out in the open. What those protocols do is they do two things. They protect that data by encrypting it, even if you are encrypting it using SSL. And they also block people from accessing your wireless network without knowing the proper passkey. The broken part is the actual information decryption, which means they can't get on your network, but they can read everything you're doing on your network. But once again, they have to be within a range of your wireless access point and your computers. It's not like they can be halfway across the country or in another country and steal your data. They have to be kind of close to you. So it's important because everyone uses this to kind of protect your privacy at, you know, wherever you're going. But it's not, you know, critical, oh my God, the world's falling down kind of security exploit either. But WPA, basically, anyone can connect to your network and anyone can read all your data. So WPA needs to be gone. WPA 2 just needs to be patched
sure.
when you can.
Well, the good news is if Judith gets logged into her router to make that change to go from, and I'm assuming it's a new enough one that it, you know, it has WPA 2, because I'm not sure how old that protocol is, but it's up there.
Well, we're talking about 15, 17 years now.
Oh, yeah. So the router's going to have that. So the good news for Judith is while she's in there changing her router from WPA to WPA 2, she can go ahead and check for updates and hopefully, again, it's a new enough router that and you can tell me if I'm wrong or not, Jeff, but in my router, I've got a tick box for just having the router do the updates automatically, and I just let it do that. I know a lot of people would say, oh, you know, don't do that. You know, what happens if this or what happens if that?
But that's important, but for the WPA2, I just want to make sure it's clear. The clients are the most important to patch, not the router.
Oh.
It's the clients that and it's basically the way the protocol was implemented is a slight flaw. So they're just changing it in software really quickly. But the APs are important to patch and the routers, as always, mm-hmm. because that's how people can remote into your network for the most part. But the main part on this one is getting all your client patches. Like I said, Apple is producing patches for all the iOS devices and Macs. That mm-hmm. should be out fairly quickly. Windows already has a patch out. Most of the wireless cards have drivers out for Windows already patches. So this is not an easy one you can just patch your router and worry about. You have to patch all your devices. Now, that's going to be easier than saying if you have, like, a thermostat or something like that. But patches should come out and auto-update and all that stuff over time. But like I said, you don't need to be too worried. Do you care if anyone can actually – they can't affect it, but they can see that you set your thermostat to 79 degrees, right? The most important ones are the stuff you do online banking with and all that stuff to patch those clients. In the time, everything needs to be patched, just not the router.
Joel, do most – Apple products, and I don't know the age of this iPad or what version it is, but do most of them do the updates automatically, or do they manually trigger, or how is Judith gonna take her iPad and get it to the latest version of software, or the most recently patched, as Jeff says?
Well, you do have to okay the update. It will try and run the update. You can set it to update automatically.
Okay.
A lot of times, depending on what security have set up, you might still have to add your password once in a while. And sometimes if an update's large enough, you have to be hooked up to a Wi-Fi network. That actually happens to my wife a lot, where she doesn't have the Wi-Fi on her phone. So some larger updates kind of stack up until it has Wi-Fi because the update might be large enough that that it requires Wi-Fi to do that. So, you know, when you're at home and in a secure place, make sure your Wi-Fi is on and auto updates turned on, and that should take care of it depending on what version of the operating system you're doing. But every once in a while you do have to okay it, and it's pretty easy to access that. You just go to the settings and then go to general and then software update, and it's right there. Options are there as well. So
okay.
Pretty straightforward.
Well, it seems like this iPad is, you know, it's telling her that her wireless isn't secure. So by using WPA, so it seems like that this product is fairly security minded.
Yeah, I mean, almost anything, if you try to use WPA anymore, will tell you don't use it. Most routers in the setup will say no. Yes, it's a variable for back-end legacy compatibility, but I think most Apple and most Windows devices, if I connect to WPA network, I'll get a security warning saying, hey, don't do this. So it's really just there for, like, the old Wii's and stuff that require it. Otherwise, I think most routers would have actually removed it by now entirely and not even let you select the option. So,
okay. Joel, did you have something you wanted to say there?
I didn't know. Huh? Okay. Nope, I agree. I agree with Jeff. When it comes to security, I agree with Jeff.
Yeah, okay. Jeff, how close are we getting to recommending to folks? You mentioned, or actually Joel mentioned about hooking up to a wireless to get to download patches and things, and they're being so big. But I guess one of the things I'm starting to hear is, you know, those airport security or the airport open Wi-Fis and the and different shopping centers or fast food places or whatever are absolute no-nos now to not hook into because of security reasons. Are we getting close to telling people to really avoid any open Wi-Fi anymore? Is that getting pretty bad?
Well, there's two distinct threats you have to be aware of, and you have to make an informed decision, right? The biggest single threat, especially if you're not patching your machine, is anyone on that network can attack you directly, and if you're not patched, if you have a remote code exploit, they can take over your machine fairly quickly and almost instantaneously of you connecting to the network. You would not have time to react to stop it. But if your machine is updated and you keep it updated and patched, there's no humongous threat out, which for that kind of stuff, which is fairly rare. The biggest thing is anyone on that network can listen in and steal all of the data you transmit. I highly recommend in that case a VPN if you want your data to be secure. I would not do, you know, credit card transactions and stuff like that without some kind of encryption, making sure it is fully encrypted and stuff like that. SSL can be broken in some cases. And I really, if I was in a public, I would really do a VPN-type solution to keep my data private, or just don't transmit data. You don't care if anyone's listening. I made the example. If all you're going to do is set your home thermostat and the password and username are encrypted, but the actual command to set it is not, then, you know, do you care if anyone knows you set your thermostat to 80 or 81, right? Do you care if they read your email to your sister? You probably do care that they can grab your credit card data and stuff like that if you do a credit card transaction, right? So there's different levels you have to be aware of. And a VPN most of the time will take care of almost all those, including some remote code exploit attacks, because it kind of removes you from the network. It creates a secure tunnel from your machine to a server out there and doesn't allow the local traffic to interfere with your machine too much. So in that case, I wouldn't mind it. But always make sure your machines are patched and you have all the latest security stuff applied. That's probably the biggest risk, especially if you're using a VPN.
And you just sort of really quickly said what a VPN is, that secure tunnel. But VPN, it's virtual private network, correct?
Correct.
And that's I've seen some articles lately, a lot of people are raising some red flags about VPN services. Saying some of these aren't passing the smell test on, you know, keeping log, you know, basically,
well,
all the reasons that you would get a VPN for, they're not really passing the test. So how does one find a VPN that they can trust?
Okay. Well, there's a couple of different levels, because the really latest thing is law enforcement went and actually found a person using a VPN. Because the VPN provider said we didn't keep any logs, but they were keeping enough logs that the FBI, when they requested, could subpoena the records legally and actually trace it back to where this person was, his real IP address. If you're doing illegal activity, there's no VPN out there you should trust, because it's illegal and there's always enough logs to track you back. If you're just trying to protect your data, in most cases, most of the paid VPNs will be just fine. The free VPNs, though, become a little bit more problematic in that many of them will make money by watching your surfing habits. Verizon kind of does this by injecting cookies into your browsing stream and then selling that as marketing data. Of course, Facebook does this already. Google does this already. So it depends on what your level is. If you want to be totally anonymous with no one ever be able to track you, then you need to look at Tor. And even Tor, the FBI can track people on at times because they put up fake nodes and stuff. If you're just looking to protect your data so hackers do not steal your financial stuff,
mm-hmm.
most VPNs will be good. Just realize the free ones are probably selling your data as marketing. But then almost every website you go to anymore is doing the exact same thing. So, you know, you have to weigh, well, it's already being done no matter what. So you kind of have to weigh your risk of what you're trying to do, right? Are you transmitting, secrets, company secrets? That's one level of risk that you probably want a paid VPN or a company VPN for. If you're just browsing Amazon and buying a shirt off Amazon, just about any VPN will probably be good. I would only really myself trust the paid ones, but, you know, that's my personal opinion.
How does one find a VPN? Do you just go to Google and type in, I need a VPN, and somebody has a list of them there? Is there like
I wouldn't recommend that. Yes? I would definitely not recommend going to Google and, saying, I need a VPN.
What do you recommend?
I would highly recommend going to CNET and reading reviews. There are different tech companies that actually review VPN providers. They've done the diligence. They reviewed mostly the paid ones, and they give you the benefits and disadvantages. Because some are slower, some are faster, some have different security mechanisms, some have different policy, and it's a good overview. CNET is a good one, but there's quite a few reviews. I would go and actually read user reviews on a VPN before I would trust actually giving money to any VPN. A raw Google search is not good because there's way too many free ones that are kind of questionable in that. I would look for trusted known sources, Bloomberg, Forbes, the tech journals all review these stuff. Those are going to be the top end that you can trust a lot more. But read the reviews, because even once in a while they're part of, we can't trust this VPN appliance because we caught them injecting cookies, right? So don't trust that VPN provider. But read reviews and be a little cautious.
Yeah, Joel, was that your concern that if you just type it into Google, it's going to give you so much advertiser spam or something?
Somebody could say, hey, this is a VPN, and then, you know, it could be spyware. I'm not saying that would actually happen, and probably Googling it would actually work, but go to a trusted source. CNET's a good option, so that you can, you know, get the right companies. You're not just going by, you know, three dudes in Ukraine that created their own VPN so they can, you know, get the stuff off your computer. I don't know that there is such a thing, but just, you know, much safer to go with recommendations.
And there's a lot of different options in VPN. For example, the one I picked, I can both do from my machine, or I can actually upload a file to a router and have my router VPN my entire network at times. I can turn that on and off as I please. Also, my provider, I picked them because they actually have over 30 data centers across the world that I can choose what center I'm connecting to, so that I can always pick the closest one for gaming and stuff like that to reduce latency. So, you know, there's a lot of variety in a lot of this stuff. You go all the way from Tor all the way to mine's $10 a month, and I'm willing to pay for it because I get lots of options, lots of benefits, and I get phone support. If there's a problem, I can call them. Just like any business, the more they offer and that kind of stuff, the more legitimate they're going to be because, you know, this is their business. If they get a bad rep or they get, you know, if they do bad things, they're probably going to be out of business fairly quickly.
Help me with a term here. I understand what VPN is, and I'll tell you what, I'm going to think about this question while we take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about VPNs going the other way, using a VPN to VPN into your home rather than going the opposite way. But we'll delve into that just right after this break.
Support for Reporting on Technology and Innovation comes from Juna Sleep System. Personalize your mattress. More information at junasleep.com.
And we're back with the October 20th edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. We've got another Tech Radio, a couple of them coming up in November, November 3rd, I believe. That's the iPhone X release date, right, Joel?
The 27th,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, 27th.
With any, I'm sorry, yeah, the 3rd, yep.
Third, yeah,
sorry,
actually
yep.
Comes out.
27th is when it releases. Yeah, hopefully I'll have one and we can talk about it.
Excellent. So we have another show coming up on the 3rd. I believe the wireless router issue that we just talked about is going to be on Sci-Fi after this show today. So stay tuned for Ira Flatow's take on that. He'll probably have some interesting panelists to talk more about that subject. But our webpage, facebook.com/techradio, is where you can interface with us, ask us questions. The conversation always continues there. And I was just trying to find that. The NPR did a nice piece on VPNs, and there was a link in that, and I'm going to find that, and I'm going to repost that on our Tech Radio page this afternoon. So a good reason to go to that page this afternoon if you're interested in this whole VPN thing. And I'm not going to profess to know I know everything about it. I've actually got one. I use it occasionally. And Jeff, I'm intrigued as to how to set my router up to basically take all my home data and wrap it in that tunnel, that secure encrypted tunnel, and get it out to where I need it to go. But I heard an interesting thing this weekend. I was at my son's house, and I was talking to some of his friends that happened to be way geekier than me even, and they were talking about being able to VPN into his computer at home, basically from his phone. Now, what kind of a function of the VPN is that? You can get back into your stuff securely?
Well, it's the same thing. All VPNs have a client and a server. And in this case, the server is either his home computer or it could be his home router. Some routers do support this, some do not. The more expensive ones do. And basically allows you to connect back to all your home devices over a secure tunnel instead of out, right? They work all the same. A little bit more complex sometimes to set up because you're having to do all the setup and you have to know what your ISP public IP address is and all that kind of stuff than just, you know, the plug and go stuff. That's the outbound stuff, so to speak, where you're sitting on a computer and going out to some server on the internet that's doing all the heavy work for you to figure all this stuff out.
Sure.
But it's very easy done. Lots of people have done it. You can actually proxy. It's a good way for open Wi-Fi. If you set that up, you can bring all your traffic back into your home network and out, so it looks like it's all coming from your home network, and that keeps all your stuff secure when you're traveling and stuff like that. It gets a little bit more technical, complex. There are programs out there. A good example is, go to my PC and stuff. That is, you know, a reverse VPN too. It lets you log into your PC from out on the internet through a tunnel that's kind of set up for you. But those are the same things. It's a VPN tunnel between two machines, right? So go to my PC, go to my network. There's a few of them out there. There's ones you can do on your router and stuff. There's a lot of options, just like the ones we were talking about before.
Now, let me get this straight. So he's using, or he could be using, his home broadband connection to do his traffic through, like, let's just say he's in another city and he's on his cell phone, he can actually route his internet through his home system. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's, you know, VPNs at a base are, I'm moving the traffic someplace else before it goes out, right?
Okay.
So whenever I make that tunnel, anything on my computer is going to go down that tunnel, and then it won't leave the tunnel until that end, and then it'll go to wherever its real destination is. All you're doing is you're sending it to your home network, and then at your home network, it's sending it back out, right? The tunnel is between your remote PC and your home network. It's really no fundamentally different, just a little bit more technical setup, just not as easy unless you use one of the standard web type stuff, like go to my PC, sure, to set up those connections.
And you would use this, in his case, I think he was going after either his files at home or his, is there a way to do media through that, to get onto their cable system or get into their Roku or, you know, I'm not even really sure. I think it's a little bit over my head, honestly.
Well, no. Anything you can do from home, you can remotely access. I know people that stream video on their phones from their home servers. Roku's Sling boxes are set up like this already. They create these VPN tunnels. You're just not aware of it, right, to make all this stuff work. Almost everything you, like thermostats and all that stuff that you set up like over the web, they're actually VPN tunnels. You're just not aware of it because you're using a service like a web front end to do this. But they're creating these VPN tunnels already. So media, whatever you want to do is fine. You're just creating the tunnel yourself to force all the traffic through this. It's a great way, especially, for web surfing to get around proxies and stuff like that, because whatever your home network can access, you can access then just like if you're staying home. The way I've always envisioned a VPN is when I make a VPN connection, my computer is now part of that network I made the connection to, my home network in this case, right? So it's just like me sitting in my living room or sitting at my desktop computer. I may just be in Europe, but technically the computer is part of my home network, and everything in the world is seeing it coming from my home network. So I'm actually connected to my home network wherever I go. That's what a VPN really does. It connects you to that network you're connecting to and makes your computer part of that network wherever it may be.
I think you've helped me get a handle on that. I appreciate that. So I actually learned something today.
You just have to, the most important thing people forget is when you do that, you do have, you know, differences in upload and download speeds. Well, now you're uploading the data from your home network back to your client, so you're not going to get the same speeds that you may be used to at the home computer, because while the download to the home network is fast, it now has to upload from the home network to your machine, and that's going to be quite a bit slower. So,
sure.
You know, there is some trade-offs there.
Right. Joel, you sent me a couple of links today. They look intriguing.
Yes.
Should we place those on our Facebook page for folks and just give us a little quick spin about what these are, and these are for students?
No, I just wish I was a student when this stuff was around.
Oh,
the first link is a thing, is a notebook called the Rocket Book. I'm holding it in my hand. It's just a notebook, and this is the Rocket Book Everlast, and it's like a $20-$30 notebook with like I don't know 10, 12, 20 pages in it.
Yeah,
and basically they're reusable, so you write on them. And then you can erase them like a wet erase marker, but the paper actually feels more or less like paper. And you use, a certain model of Pilot pen. So they're like regular pens that are erasable. And so you write on it, take your notes however you want, and then you shoot it with their app on the phone, and then it automatically sends it wherever you want. If it's notes, it might send it to your Dropbox. If it's a shopping list, you could text it to your husband. If it's a picture, it could go to this place, it's like I said, $20-$30, and it's 100% completely reusable, and I've been playing around with it for a couple weeks, and I just think it's fantastic.
I think we'll give that a try.
Yeah, and then the other thing that I put on the list was something I heard about a couple weeks ago called MoviePass, and basically it's like Netflix for movies. Here in Sioux Falls, both Century Theaters participate, and it's like $10 a month, and you can go to one movie a day all month long for $10. No joke.
Huh. All right. Well, appreciate those tips, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks with more tech tips. Join that discussion with us, of course, anytime. Our website is sdpb.org. If you'd like to listen to the show from today, click on the listen link, and we'll have that link posted, or actually sign up for the podcast, and we'll deliver it to your machine every 2 weeks automatically for you. And that's unfortunately all the time we do have for today's show. I want to thank our panelists today, Jeff and Joel. It's been a great discussion. Learned a lot. Hope we passed along some things that folks can use today. And remind you, SDPB is always there for you on the app or at sdpb.org. Go there, click on listen. Have a great weekend, everybody.